Support for WPR comes from Present Music, performing honest music with guest violist and curator Nadia Sirota, May 9th at 8 at the Milwaukee Art Museum. Tickets and info are at presentmusic.org.
Imagine a trench a mile or 1,000 feet deep and about 22 miles long. Now imagine that that trench is within sight of the shores of Lake Superior. Well, there you have it. The other thing you have to also imagine is imagine an area where the unemployment rate has been in double digits for as long as most people can remember, and a lot of people are looking for work. Well, there you have the debate. It's jobs versus the environment when it comes to the Pinoki Mountain Range and the proposed GTAC mine. This hour, we're going to talk to a couple of people who made a documentary about the Pinoki Hills mining project called Wisconsin's Mining Standoff. That documentary is touring the state of Wisconsin. We'll discuss that this hour. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine. Joining me, Brad Lichtenstein, is the director, a writer, and senior producer for the Al Jazeera documentary Wisconsin's Mining Standoff. Also joining me is Devin Kupery, who is the producer of the documentary. And again, it's on a statewide tour. Its next screening is Tuesday, that's tomorrow, in Milwaukee, and we'll find out more about that. Gentlemen, good morning, and welcome to the Joy Cardine program.
Hi, thanks for having us.
So the how did you two get started on this documentary? What prompted your interest in this issue?
Well, the initial exposure to this story in particular goes back to 2011, before this controversial bill even arose. And it was, there was a conference in the southern part of the state, and the chairman of the Bad River Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa, spoke at the conference about what was at stake for his people on the reservation, which was located downstream of where this proposed mine would be. And that's the first exposure we had to this topic. And it was clear that there's a lot at stake for that sovereign nation and for the region as a whole for a number of reasons. And then as this story unfolded with the mining law in the state legislature, it became clear that it's an important story about the state of democracy in Wisconsin.
So then, so you had the idea. What was the next step? How did you get from, yeah, I think this is a story worth telling, to actually producing the documentary itself?
Well, it took some time to find distribution and find funding for this topic. We knew we wanted to do a story on it, and so we brought it to several different news organizations, media outlets, and it was ultimately Al Jazeera America and the Fault Lines program, which is an investigative documentary series that was interested in partnering on this story.
And just to be clear, you don't work for Al Jazeera. You you and Brad are with a company called 371 Productions?
That's right. Yes, I'm the president of 371 Productions, and we're an independent production company that makes work for a lot of different distribution outlets, from PBS to Al Jazeera America, film festivals, and so forth. So this was a project that we brought to them.
Okay, and Al Jazeera gave the green light, and you were off. What were some of the things that really jumped out at you as you started to look at this issue as being the main points that you wanted to be sure to cover in this? Because it's a complicated issue, but it also, there's a lot of emotion, particularly up here in the area where I happen to live in that vicinity. And so this has been a real, a very passionate issue for a lot of people on well-meaning people on both sides of it. And it's actually created some conflicts between groups that normally would be on the same side in some debates. And so it's a real hot button issue. If you want to get something started, go into pretty much any coffee shop between Superior and Hurley and just mention the term iron mining. You'll get all kinds of reaction. And so for a lot of us, this is a pretty emotional issue. So what were some of the things that you discovered early on in your research as you started looking into this that you found particularly interesting or enlightening?
Yeah, well, one, like you're saying, it's important to hear directly from the people who would be potentially in the area where this mine would be. There's some very passionate feelings on both sides of the issue, and we wanted to make sure that people who both support and oppose the mine were part of this documentary. And second, as I mentioned before, the process in which this very controversial bill was passed is a very important part of the story. And you see an issue where the mining company had a lot of influence over the legislation that governs it. And so it's an important story about how a company had significant influence over its own rules in our state.
Mm-hmm.
If I can jump into the thing I felt really passionate about and learned along the way is the stakes for democracy. I'm 45 years old, and so 30 years ago when I was 15 and I was a senior in high school, I had the great honor to work for Congressman John Lewis, civil rights leader and congressman from Atlanta. And when I was with him, I learned about the civil rights movement, and that instilled in me a kind of deep appreciation for the value of democracy and how fragile it is. And so one of the things that I think comes out in the film is the influence that outside money and corporations have on very, very local issues. So it's very controversial for people, but it's also important to bring out the facts and understand what exactly is going on in terms of influencing legislation. And that's one of the things that we bring out in the film, and that's one of the things that I connected to personally the most.
So really, as you watch this, there really are two stories happening here. One is about the mine itself and its potential impact on people, whether it's providing a job or some would say threatening the environment that sustains us up here. And then the other is the process that got us here in terms of how legislation was written. And there's an interesting scene in the documentary of basically a confrontation with it's an interview with a representative of GTAC where the discussion is who wrote the bill. And that was a pretty interesting sequence. What's the reaction been to this documentary so far? What have you been hearing to people who have screened it?
Yeah, well, we've had about 5 screenings so far. All of them have been very well attended. We just had one in Ashland at the Northern Great Lakes Visitor Center, and it was there were folks sitting on the floor. It was packed, and folks have been moved by the piece. Two, overall, people are concerned about the issue and very interested no matter what part of the state we're showing it in. And people like having a personal connection to the issue in a way that's not so possible, not as easy to get with just a news story. And I think people come away having a really good sense of what's at stake and what this means for the local area around where this proposed mine would potentially be and also for the state as a whole.
And I think I'm sorry, can I just jump in?
Well, no, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
I think one of the things people are appreciating, and of course, you know, it gets a little bit swept away in the emotion of this issue, but one of the things that we're really proud of is that we got to work with a news organization that has high journalistic standards. And so what that meant is that we had to do extensive fact-checking to support every single claim in the film. And one of the things I think people get a lot of value out of with this film and what we hope the statewide tour is able to do is to insert some facts into a debate that seems to be very much a spin debate for the most part. People tend to repeat what they want to be the truth as opposed to going with the data that we have about the impacts of the mine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you get a lot of swapping of message points.
Exactly.
More or less, particularly if we're talking about people who are running for office. I would imagine, and correct me if I'm wrong here, I would imagine that the reaction you would get to this documentary in Ashland would be different than the reaction you would get to it, say, in Milwaukee or in La Crosse or someplace where they're not planning to dig this mine.
Well, we'll find out tonight. We have a screening at, is it 7 p.m. or 7:30 p.m., Devin?
It's 7 p.m. at the Milwaukee Domes downtown in Milwaukee.
And what, one of the things we've done is we've reached out, because this is an election year, we've reached out to both political parties in the state of Wisconsin and offered the film as a screening and discussion program. And the Democratic Party in Milwaukee took us up on that offer, so we have a screening that is sponsored by them tonight at the Domes. And we're hoping to hear some kind of positive answer from the Republican Party as well. We'd love to bring this to Republican Party meetings as well.
So just so people can find out where they can see this, where would we go to get details on the schedule of screenings?
Oh, that's easy. Our website is updated, so it's easy. It's 371, the numbers, 371productions.com, and then you click on Documentaries in Wisconsin Mining Standoff, or, well, that's the easiest way to do it. Otherwise, I could give you the long URL.
Well, 371 Productions, that's production plural with an S on the end of it, .com, and right. I'm assuming we'll have a link to that at the on the WPR website as well and on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page if it's not there already. I note that if those in northern Wisconsin, if you did not get to see it at the Northern Great Lakes Visitor Center last week, it's coming to Madeline Island on August 13th. It'll be at the world-famous Tom's Burned Down Cafe at 9 o'clock, and then it's actually going to be shown in Superior on September 16th in the Mannion Theater on the UW-Superior campus. That's in the Holden Fine Arts Center, which is also where my office is, not the theater,
oh,
but
good.
The center.
So we expect you to be
oh, okay.
there.
Well, if I'm in town, I plan to see it, and that's at 7 o'clock. The Holden Fine Arts Center, by the way, if you're interested, is located at 1805 Catlin Avenue. But it's also, you've got one in Mellon at the library. I missed that one on August 14th, and that's at 7. So in northern Wisconsin, if you're interested, but it's also going to be in Montello, Wisconsin, in Milwaukee again, Janesville, Eau Claire, Beloit. You'll be all over the state with this thing, so people will have ample opportunity to see it. And it's also being broadcast on Al Jazeera's network, isn't it?
Well, it's already had, I believe, 4 broadcasts on Al Jazeera America. I don't know that there's plans to broadcast it again yet. There's some talk of doing that, and there's some talk about it going over to their sister larger network, Al Jazeera English. But we'll announce it on our website when there's information about that.
Okay.
But one thing I was going to note is that it's interesting because one of the things that we kept coming across, whether they were supporters of the mine or supporters of the movement against the mine, is that people in northern Wisconsin often felt like they were neglected by the process, and particularly the state process. And so one of the things that we're trying to do with this is to make sure that we take it all over the state so that there's ample opportunity to talk about this mine. You might remember back when this legislation was first introduced, there was a lot of controversy over the location of hearings as well, and the initial idea that there would be no hearings up north, it would only be in Milwaukee. And then eventually there were shadow hearings that were held by Tim Cullen and Bob Jauch and Dale Schultz. So we're trying to draw a lesson, I guess, from all of that and make sure that we have wide accessibility to the information that's in the documentary.
Okay.
And,
800,
and,
go ahead.
Okay, yeah. And the other thing is many of the screenings have also a discussion following the screening. So we're extending the film to anyone who wants to screen it. So if anybody wants to hold a screening, you can just get in contact with us. Again, 371productions.com and find the Wisconsin's Mining Standoff page. And so people are free to have whatever type of discussion they want to have around this issue and this documentary.
Okay. 800-642-1234. Speaking of discussion, here's a way for you to join the program and talk about this documentary, ask questions about it, maybe discuss the issue of mining as it's been discussed so far today on the program. And we welcome your participation at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. You can also join us via email. The address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. And you can join us with your comments or questions on Facebook. Look for the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page and leave your comment or question there. We're talking about a new documentary which is touring the state of Wisconsin. It's about the mining issue. It's called Wisconsin's Mining Standoff. It was produced by 371 Productions and has been broadcast by Al Jazeera. And we're discussing that this morning with a couple of people who were involved in making this documentary happen. And we'll continue that discussion in just a moment. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about mining in Wisconsin this hour on the Ideas Network. A proposed iron mine in northern Wisconsin has stirred a lot of controversy and a lot of passion. Now there's a documentary called Wisconsin's Mining Standoff that is touring the state, and we have a couple of people with us who produced the documentary. And we welcome your comments and questions as well at 800-642-1234. My guests are Brad Lichtenstein, the director, writer, and senior producer for the documentary Wisconsin's Mining Standoff, and Devin Cumpery is the producer of the documentary. And as I said, it's on a statewide tour. If you want to find out more about the tour, you can go to 371productions.com, and there's a schedule there. It's in Milwaukee tonight. And so if you're in Milwaukee, you'll be able to go and see it. All right, let's get some callers involved here. We'll start with Jeff in Iron County, certainly a county that's right at the center of all of this. Jeff, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you. I haven't seen the documentary, but I was just wondering if your producers had included in the documentary anything about the lease agreement that the Iron County Board of Supervisors has signed between the company GTEC and the county. It's this 3,331 acres that they're going to use as a storage site for the overburden or their waste rock, and it's quite controversial up here because it's currently our public land, and it's open to hunting, fishing, trapping, you know, berry picking, whatnot, and the agreement is that they could use it for the duration of their mining. They'll basically remove all the forest products that we're currently receiving from it. So and make it so. And they'll pay us $28 an acre or $23 an acre, I guess, for the duration of their mining. Then they give it back to us. And I think some of the fear I've heard from locals is that what condition is this land in? What could it ever produce forest again? And is it a really poor deal? And the agreement was done without the consent. Without a public hearing, so the public really didn't know much about it. I just wondered if your producers covered that part of the mining controversy.
Jeff, thanks for that. So, did you talk about this lease that Jeff is talking about?
Thanks for your question, Jeff. So there was so much to this issue that we researched and learned about and looked into that we weren't able to include because of the complexity and richness of the story. That's an important local issue, and there's a number of interesting stories about local politics that we weren't able to get to. We do cover the mining bill and what that means for that piece of land, potentially in terms of the bill allowing the company to fill wetlands and streams on that land. So that specifically, more in a broader context, I guess, with the mining bill.
It's really one of the reasons why we're doing this statewide tour, because we want people to come out and talk about all the related issues. There's so much for people to learn, in this issue, and this is an issue that's going to be really before the public in a sense. During the gubernatorial elections, and there's going to be other opportunities to weigh in. So I think it's really important to have people come and talk about these very specific issues. One thing I will say, the caller mentioned public hearings, and I remember one of the things that I really wanted to include in the film, but we we didn't have enough time in a half an hour documentary, was footage of the chair of the Iron County, the Mining Impact Committee, saying that testifying at a public hearing was a privilege, not a right. And I think that points to one of the casualties of democracy that has happened during this mining standoff.
And where are we on the process of establishing an iron mine in northern Wisconsin? What did you determine as you produced the documentary? Where are we with this project?
The story is unfolding, of course, and right now the company's goal is to obtain permits for the mine on the state level and the federal level. There's still a lot to be seen in terms of whether this project will go through or not. There's potential for legal challenges, and so it's definitely something that, even though it might not be in the media every day, it's continuing to unfold, and it's still an important issue.
And when it moves forward with the Department of Natural Resources, listeners can actually go to the DNR website and see what phase of the process the mining company and the state are in. And correct me if I'm wrong, Devin, the mining company just applied for just was granted another exploration. I can't remember the name of the process. Are you familiar?
I think drilling some kind of exploratory work at the proposed mine site.
And the Bad River Tribe also just sent a letter in May, I believe, to the EPA to invoke parts of the Clean Water Act, Section 400-something-C,
right.
I believe.
Yeah, 404-C.
And that's part of a strategy to try to stop the mine. So there's a lot going on.
And that particular strategy came up last week in a candidate forum between the three individuals who are in the Democratic primary August 12th for the 25th State Senate seat recently occupied for so many years by State Senator Bob Jauch, who you interview extensively in your documentary, and that very thing, should the EPA be involved or not, and that in itself is a topic of controversy. There's really very little that everybody agrees on about this mining project, except that it's controversial. Let's go to John in Rhinelander next. John, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, hi. I saw the documentary at the Great Lakes Visitor Center just recently here, and I'd like to compliment you guys on the fact that it expressed the opinions and the views of the local people who know, growing up there, living in Iron County and Ashland County, that a boom and bust economy does not provide a stable government. It doesn't provide a long-term jobs at all. That's the issue. Clean water and that's the basis of a sustainable economy. They interviewed a farm family that lives right next to where the mine will be, and how their business is sustainable. It's sustained generation after generation with food direct to the local people, and that'll all be gone if that mine is put in. And the people in Hurley realize how it's corrupted their government, that the boom and bust mining economy of the 30s and 40s, how that the county board in Iron County basically just rolled over to the mining company. The county board in Ashland, where that never happened, quickly found out. They quickly realized that this was what was going to happen. It's a boom and bust like in West Virginia, and they wanted no part of it. So thanks for the documentary.
John, thank you for your phone call and for your comments. Brad, Devin, a follow-up?
Sure. So, yeah, John brings up an important point that iron mining of this scale has been done before in northern Minnesota. So it's a situation where we can look at what those communities have experienced and what the impact has been on the communities that have had iron mining. And that's an important thing to do because there's a lot at stake, and given that it's been done before. And in terms of the economy in those places, if you look at it, there continues to be high unemployment. So it's not a simple issue of a mine, you know, solving problems. It's also an issue of what happens to other sectors of the economy is an important question to consider.
Mm-hmm. Here's a comment from Gary on Facebook, who writes, there is no mining standoff, as the propaganda film suggests. Environmental studies are actively progressing to ensure that the project can be done in compliance with the laws that protect the surrounding environment. And the out-of-town professional agitators don't seem to be hanging around the mining site too much anymore. The few circus characters that continue to perform their theatrics have not been effectual in slowing down the process, let alone standing it off. The iron is here. We can mine it in an environmentally responsible manner, or else the mine will not be permitted, and the boost to the economy is badly needed. No amount of propaganda will change that. That's from Gary on Facebook. So strong words from Gary.
Thank you for those words, Gary. One of the things that I notice is that the talking points from the company, from GTAC, has been over and over that they will collect data, they will go through environmental processes, and that we should all trust that process. And if it's going to determine that it's going to be harmful to the environment in the various ways that we bring up in the film, whether it's sulfides or asbestos, or some other potential harm, then they won't mine. But one of the things that statement leaves out is the way in which the law in the state of Wisconsin has significantly changed. And the burden or the onus is now on the state to prove that a company, any company that wishes to gain a mining permit, is going to comply with and all the standards and is going to cause no harm. It used to be the other way around. And so that brings up a lot of questions around the resources to be able to actually make sure that that kind of compliance and practice is in place. And that's a real issue for enforcement of the law. Devin especially has done a lot of research on this. I don't know, Devin, if you want to go into a little bit more detail.
Sure. Yeah. So our piece raises some important questions that could use more attention. One of the questions is the record of what is the record of the mining company that has proposed to mine here. And when you look at the record of Chris Klein, who owns GTAC, the mines that he's operated in West Virginia and Illinois, it's a serious record of violations. The company's had over 8,000 safety violations in its mines in West Virginia and Illinois in just the last 10 years, and over 1,000 environmental violations. And the president of the company also has a record that is important to consider. He, before coming here, he operated a mine in Spain and has been charged with environmental crimes for injecting people at the mine injecting arsenic contaminated water into an aquifer.
And I think just to put it into some context, what Devin brings up with regard to the parent company to GTAC, the spokesperson for the company locally, GTAC, told us that, and also other people who supported the mine told us that those violations were in the past and that Chris Klein had actually acquired those mines with those violations. But when we looked into it and did our research, we discovered that that actually wasn't the case and that some of the violations have occurred even since the documentary was completed, so not that long ago. So these are all questions that have to be part of the consideration when the public is deciding whether or not this is something they want to support or don't want to support.
Mm-hmm. One of the questions that came up during the process of getting the mining legislation passed, the changes to Wisconsin's mining law, was how the mine proceeds would be taxed. And And one of the things that you hear in this debate, in fact, we heard it last week at the Northern Great Lakes Visitor Center when we had our political forum over there featuring the candidates for 25th State Senate, was, well, listen, they've successfully mined iron ore in Minnesota for years. You know, we're just going to have the same success here. The one of the differences there, though, is that in Minnesota, the company that's doing the mining pays for starts paying tax as soon as they put a shovel in the ground and keeps on paying as long as the mine is producing. And in Wisconsin, the law was changed so that what will actually happen is we'll have a net proceeds tax, which means after the mine's all done and the company determines whether or not it made any money, it'll pay tax on that. And that was an issue that didn't get a lot of discussion, but I'm wondering if that's something that you ran into and if you encountered anybody who had questions about that during the making of your documentary.
Well, there were some folks that told us that that was the issue that concerned them initially and changed their minds to opposing the proposed mine. And there's Pete Russo, for example, who's the chairman of the Ashland County Board, has a really interesting story. And he at first supported the idea of responsible mining, and then as time went on, decided this, that being one of the issues, realizing that it wouldn't it could hurt Ashland County in terms of the tax revenue and folks staying in the area and that kind of thing. So that was an important issue for Pete Russo, and he speaks very strongly about opposing the mine now.
800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. We have some callers on the line. We'll get to those in just a moment. We have some emails to share as well. You're certainly welcome to join the discussion. We're talking about mining in the state of Wisconsin, a new documentary produced by 371 Productions for Al Jazeera, titled Wisconsin's Mining Standoff, and it's touring the state of Wisconsin. We mentioned some of the places it's going. If you want to find out if it's coming to a place near you, you can go to 371productions.com and see a schedule there. We'll continue our discussion in just a moment. We'll take a break, come back, and have more. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine this week on the Ideas Network. In this hour, we're talking about the documentary Wisconsin's Mining Standoff with Devin Cuppery, the producer of the documentary, and Brad Lichtenstein, who is the writer and senior producer for the documentary. It's touring the state. It's in Milwaukee tonight, and you can find out more about that on our website, I believe. So we had a listener email. Does the documentary include reference to groundwater? Is the groundwater contiguous with aquifer in the various springs in that area? And has the lack of public transportation and poor roads factored into the mining debate? So what about groundwater? You did touch on that. In fact, I think you've got a scene with a farmer who says if the mine goes in, his wells will go dry.
Right, yeah. So we have a scene with a farm family called the Odovero Farm, and they live within a mile of the proposed mine site, and they're very concerned that their well would go dry with the proposed mine. And the reason is that when they dig a 1,000-foot pit, they have to suck all the water out of it to actually pull the rock out of the ground, and that creates this cone where there's significant potential for the well to go dry. And another concern that folks have had is groundwater contamination. So, yeah, that's a pretty powerful scene in the documentary.
And the second part is about some infrastructure. And I will say we didn't include it in the film. There's so much we didn't include, but Leslie Colasar, who is the chairwoman of the Mining Impact Committee, did tell us, and we were able to verify, that if the mine were to be built, there would be transportation infrastructure that would come along with it. So potentially that's one benefit, depending on how people see that.
Well, there was a lot of discussion fairly early on in the process about the effect of the mine on local roads and the burdens that would be placed on townships not just counties, but townships within the mining area. And there was concern that there wasn't going to be enough upfront money to manage the changes in infrastructure that would be needed to accommodate the mine. What can you tell us about what you found out about that?
Well, in terms of, upfront money, there's, I guess I'd encourage folks talking to or learning more about the local towns and what they're going through. What I know off the bat is that there wasn't a lot of upfront money provided to the towns for covering this cost.
Well, let me just, because I live up here and I hear about this stuff all the time, some of the concerns that have been expressed are, okay, we're the local township. We're going to have to do a lot of work to create roads that are big enough to run these big trucks and whatever is hauling all this material that they're extracting from the ground, and we're going to have to pay all that money up front to build all these roads in the hope that down the road some point we'll get some of the money back in a tax form.
Right, in the
at some point. But the state's going to take half of that, assuming there is any, and the townships are concerned that they're going to get left holding the bag. And then all of the waste is going to be left with them, and they'll just have to kind of be dealing with it. And they're really they're concerned that they don't have enough protection in this bill. Are they right to be concerned about that?
Yeah. Well, I think this, and I think this points to an important larger issue and question over who benefits and who gains the most from a mining project. And what's known is that the company that operates it will be making most of the profits, and a lot of those profits will be going to the company, which is headquartered in Florida. And so the local community won't see most of the profit in terms of, and there are also costs that the community will have to incur no matter what. And it's to be, the exact accounting is to be seen, but that's a broad issue that is important to the story.
Now, you also you interviewed people who were in favor of the mine, and the common theme here is that hey, we're looking at 600, 700 jobs possibly, and these are good paying jobs with benefits and insurance and vacations and retirement, and so forth and so on, and we desperately need those up here. And there really isn't any question about that. And one point that was made is that, okay, so tourism is our major industry here, but who's, how much are people really making there? You've got a lot of jobs at minimum wage. You certainly can't support a family of four working as a server in a local restaurant or something like that, or taking tickets at some attraction. And so you've got this real issue of economic development in northern Wisconsin, and an almost desperation to find something that will drag us out of the economic doldrums that this part of the state has been in for decades. And you found that you got that in your documentary. How did that express itself, and how does that jive with the concerns over, okay, we might get some jobs, but what are we going to be left with 30 years from now?
Well, to unpack what you have such a good understanding of the issue, you kind of hit on a lot of the different points. But to unpack it a little bit, one of the things that has been a little bit misleading is this number of 700 jobs. The 700 number actually corresponds to the length of the first phase of the mine, so the digging of the first approximately 4.5 mile long pit. And so you spread those jobs over the course of decades, and then it turns out not to be that many jobs. There would be, of course, construction jobs, initial startup jobs as well. But one of the things we also heard from a lot of people is that this mine would, if it were to go forward, would be going forward at a time when the mines in Minnesota and elsewhere are closing. And some of those people have roots in northern Wisconsin. So some of those jobs would probably go to people who would move back. Now, you could argue that that's still a benefit for the area because you would have people making more money and therefore spending more money in that economy. But the question is, how sustainable are those jobs? You know, what happens as one of the callers described, is a boom and bust economy, and whether those are jobs that are going to last and whether that's going to create wealth for the community. And, you know, it's been interesting. While we were up there, we also saw some economic development activity that's built on the base of tourism but extends further into more what people would call sustainable jobs, whether it's creating products from the local economy like maple syrup for sale, whether it's looking into energy types of industries. There was a lot of activity going on and a lot of talk about what would perhaps be some alternatives to a mining economy.
Let's take a call. We'll go to Rhinelander, where Ray is on the phone. Ray, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for presenting your documentary. Like you said, a half hour doesn't do it justice. I know you're doing the best you can. You could actually do 2 hours, and you know that, and I know that, but money and time are one thing. Anyways, this brings up memories. Let me tell you something quickly here. Back in the 70s, when the Crandon mine was trying to get in, I see these same tactics that started back then with the proneness of this, the money, the jobs, et cetera, et cetera. So to make a long story short, what we did, some of us in the beginning there, and I'm not taking credit for everything that happened afterwards with the Crandon mine, it's just in the beginning, we were involved with Nicolet College, and what we did is we had different information things going on in Crandon, and we brought in different speakers because there was so much hoopla going on about how this is going to be great, et cetera, et cetera. Well, when more information came in about these companies and what they did and didn't do, what it would cost to the towns and everything else, it really opened up people's eyes to what was happening and not happening. And through that process back then, helped to establish better water quality in our state. Department of Natural Resources gained more knowledge about things. The feds came in with their part. So there's been a lot done since the Crandon mine for information for people, and there are laws and things on the books where a company like this now that's trying to use, in my opinion now, some of these Stone Age tactics to try and push stuff through without informing people of proper meetings and procedures isn't going to work. You know, people need to be informed of their rights. Townships have rights. Individuals have rights with this. A lot of time was spent on this Crandon mine organizing things, and even a lot of people have even passed on that were involved with it. So I wanted to mention that people out there, you have choices on information. Townships, you have choices on what you can zone and control as far as roads and everything else. When mining companies come in, as usual, there's the big parade and everything else. But you end up in the long run, locals, paying for any cleanup crap that wasn't structured in the beginning. And this whole thing on the tax bill about we'll just give people tax money in the end, that's a bunch of crap. Every part of the state financially needs to be structured by the locals, the township, and everyone, so you don't get screwed in the end, literally.
Ray, thanks so much for the call. Brad, Devin?
Yeah, well, that points to an important issue in terms of Ashland County, which has passed several ordinances related to the proposed iron mine, which effectually prevented or stopped GTAC from bulk sampling in the county. And that's also an important point to bring up, is that we have Ashland County and Iron County, and in general, the folks in Ashland County are more opposed than Iron County, although there's not that great statistics available. But most of the impact would come to Ashland County, whereas seems like most of the jobs would potentially go to folks in Iron County.
And mm-hmm. I was just going to add in one thing. There's a lot of parallels people point out with the issue of the Crandon mine in the past. One thing, though, that's very different is that at that time there wasn't the great abundance of influence coming from out of state for issues like this. And one of the things in the documentary is that there's a person who runs for Iron County Board. So we're talking about, you know, a very small element of government. And yet money from Americans for Prosperity, which is the Koch brothers backed, and I hate to mention the Koch brothers, but it's true that David Koch, co-founder of Americans for Prosperity, and you have to ask yourself, why is Americans for Prosperity getting involved in a tiny county board election? And the answer, I think, has something to do with the importance, of this mine to corporate interests that are not based here in Wisconsin. And that's one thing about the landscape that's really changed.
We have a caller who wants to address that issue specifically. Anne is with us from Madison. Anne, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you. The company recently asked DNR to extend its exploratory drilling permits, and I don't know whether DNR, which is totally politically controlled these days, agreed to it, but my understanding is that a number of other mining companies have conducted extensive exploratory drilling in the Pinoki Hills over the years, and all of them decided not to mine there because the iron, taconite iron is by definition low-grade iron. It has to be pelletized on the premises before it can be shipped anywhere. It's a very noisy as well as polluting process, and they decided it wouldn't be profitable. And I know how important profit is to the Klein Group and to all its little, on paper subsidiaries. So really money is the only interesting issue, especially to Walker and most of the Republican legislators. And here at the hearing in Madison on a bitter cold day when it was snowing, I think in December of 2012, with a lot of people who come from up north weren't allowed to testify, she reported after investigating that Walker had at that point received $11 million from the Klein Group. Our Alberta Darling, who was also heavily involved, had gotten $500,000. So, it's all about money. They don't care what they destroy as long as, they can bribe legislators and governors and anybody else to get more of it.
Anne, thank you. Your documentary does cover the lobbying aspect of this, and you specifically spoke to a representative of GTAC about lobbying. And what did they have to say?
I can paraphrase the quote from Bob Seitz, which is that he lobbied on the issue. He said lots of people lobbied on the issue, and he likes to think that he had an effect. We asked the Bad River Tribe whether or not they had a lobbyist in Madison, and they said no. They don't have the budget to do that. Mm. But I think also the caller points out the influence of outside money, and while we can't verify the $11 million that she cited in Governor Walker's campaign from the Klein Group, because if that money was in fact given to Walker's campaign, it would be the dark money. It would be the untraceable money because of Citizens United. We were able to trace the money that went from the company to the Wisconsin Manufacturers Association and was distributed, among others, to Jessica King's race in Oshkosh, if you recall that race. The problem was that the company's legislation could not pass so long as one Republican, Dale Schultz, was voting against it. And so in order to get a veto-proof Senate, they needed one more Republican to support the mine. Mm-hmm. And that came in the form of Jessica King losing her seat to a Republican. And that was money we were able to verify.
And
it's very
hard
in this age of Citizens United to track the political money.
Well, and just as it is very difficult to make a half-an-hour documentary and include all the facts, it's even more difficult sometimes to have a one-hour talk show that covers everything in a half-an-hour documentary.
Well,
and so we'll have to leave it there, but the documentary is on tour. It is going all over the state. You should probably be able to see it in your part of the state. You can go to 371productions.com and see a schedule there. It's in Milwaukee tonight. Thanks so much to Brad Lichtenstein and Devin Cuppery for being with me today. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having us.
We had lots of help making this happen. Robin Cherry and Justin Williams and Bill Martins, thank you to all of you for a great show today. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network.